Coach, he scores!
Hello and welcome once again to the Leafs Nation podcast. I'm JP Nakoda, and with me is Danny Gray. As usual, how's it going, bud?
It's going super well. It's a gorgeous day outside. It's a good day to talk hockey, so I'm excited.
Yeah, excellent. The Leafs are they're sort of in limbo right now. I feel like we're still waiting for the ball to drop. Right, Shen for James Van Riemsdyk, big deal, but I mean, Burke says there remains a lot of work to be done. So, you know, the two most discussed players of the week, I suppose, are number one, Roberto Luongo, number two, Alexander Semin. So let's start with Luongo. You're still on the Luongo boat, but we know that the asking price is pretty exorbitant at this point. If you're Brian Burke, what's your next move?
I think Brian Burke's got all the time in the world. I know that a lot of people aren't necessarily, you know, stoked about the idea of running a Scrimer combination next year, Scrivens and Reimer. But I think that he's comfortable with doing that because, you know, that's sort of been his one, you know, everyone always talks about how, you know, we shouldn't overpay for goaltending. It's really not worth it. And, you know, every time a big goaltending contract comes out, the first thing is, oh, it's stupid to overpay for goaltending. And then on the other hand, Brian Burke refuses to do that, and people sort of criticize him and say, well, it's worth it to get consistent goaltending. And I think, obviously, the truth is somewhere in between there. But I think that given the market that Mike Gillis has set for Roberto Luongo, I'm not surprised that Burke hasn't moved on that. So I think he has the luxury of waiting because I think he's comfortable going to the season with those two goalies, where I don't think there's any way in hell that Roberto Luongo and Corey Schneider are the two Canucks goaltenders at the beginning of next season, right? So I think just by that virtue alone, I think Burke's next move is just to wait.
Yeah, I'd say so too. I mean, I'm really not that keen in giving up a whole lot for him in as much as I wouldn't be keen on overpaying for any player, right? But, you know, you touched on an interesting discussion that's been going on throughout the week, actually, on the Barilko sphere about how, you know, people shouldn't overpay for goalies. But I don't know, quite frankly, they're probably the most important players on the team. So I can't really see any reason not to, you know. As of right now, it just in terms of cap commitment, I think the Leafs are spending less than any other team on goaltending. And, right, you know, it's been our single the team's single biggest hole for the last
8 years.
Anyway, yeah, so I can't really see why anyone would shy away from finally giving up good, you know, a good amount of value in terms of trade and cap space if it means solving this problem. Because, you know, there really aren't any larger problems for the Leafs right now.
No, I would, to me, to be clear, the problem to me with Luongo isn't the contract. You know, his cap hits 5.5, right?
Yeah, 5 and change anyway.
5 and change, 5.25 or 5.5 or something. I'm okay with that. I mean, it's an overpayment, obviously, but it's not. You look at what Pavlik's getting now. What Pavlik's cap hit is 4.5.
Oh well, it's not an overpayment in terms of the cap hit.
It's just I'm worried about
in terms of term. Yeah,
I'm worried the term, even not so much. I'm worried about the assets, right? So that's why, you know, my sort of, I'm not unequivocally aboard the Luongo train. It's more, you know, if we're giving up a package that is centered around a guy like Tyler Bozak, maybe another is sort of a NHL fringe prospect kind of guy.
Matt Fratton.
See, even to me, Matt Fratton's too good because I think he's not a fringe NHL guy. I think he'll be an NHL player throughout his career. So I think that you have to even, like a guy like a Joey Crabbe or something like that, you know, not we have something of that ilk. That's where I'm okay with. But anything that's, you know, like a Bozak and a Kuhlman and a draft pick, to me, that's not worth it, right? Just because I think that I'd rather run the risk that Reimer and Scrivens can give us league average goaltending next season. So, yeah, I think it's really just a holding pattern at this point. Nothing's sort of been shaken free yet, and I think Burke's still doing some work. And I think the assets that he's going to need to get a number one center, if he does try to do that, I'd rather him use those assets first and then see what's left to take a run at Luongo, as opposed to moving a guy that maybe someone would want in return for their number one center, and then not being able to sort of, because, you know, we have a lot of sort of free players at this point, the difference makers and the guys that teams are going to want are sort of few and far between. So I think if we're dealing our sort of position of strength, I want to use those assets to upgrade the team at the center as opposed to at goal at this point.
Really? Center trumps goal for you right now?
In this specific circumstance, because I think that you can get a more long-term solution there than, you know, Roberto Longo is a good goalie, but he's only, you know, a 3 or 4 year solution at this point, right? So.
I disagree. I would fix the goaltending situation before anything else.
But do you think that's because of the years and the years of, it's just sort of, we think that now because, well, the last time we tried this, it didn't work. And the last time we tried this, it didn't work. And do you think it's just, we're not coming at it from a purely rational point of view or that?
Sure. It's got to be that way. It's got to be that a little bit. Yeah. Yeah.
Not that that's a bad way to look at it, obviously, because I think that's what a lot of people are saying, the same thing too. It's like, I don't care what the rational, you know, chances are we get league average. I want to know going into next season that I don't have to worry that we're going to see UC Rennes starting games in December.
So no, I would definitely acquire a goalie before anything else. If, you know, like all things being equal, which I'm sure they're probably not, but yeah, of course, the other name that's been bandied about is Alexander Semin, who, I mean, for a guy who I would say has a zero chance of becoming a Maple Leaf, there's been an awful lot of talk about, you know? I mean, it's a sort of confusing situation, right? I can't understand why, you know, the offers aren't just pouring in, and now that, you know, Parise and Suter have both landed, you'd think, okay, the time is right for Alexander Semin to decide on a team, right? Or, you know, maybe a league. I'd like to think he's staying in the NHL, though. But, yeah, he remains unsigned. Although the Leafs don't need another winger, I'd gladly trade, I don't know, almost any one of our wingers before him.
Before whom, sorry?
Before Semin.
Oh, okay.
You know, like, if we manage to sign Semin, like, that's wonderful. Like, fire any other winger out of the cannon that isn't named Phil Kessel. I don't care.
James Van Riemsdyk, hey, don't. All things being equal, he's younger, cheaper.
Yes, but not as good at hockey.
Well, we at so far. And I think a lot of the time, too, I mean, not that James Van Riemsdyk was playing with slubs, but Semin benefited probably from playing on a pretty good Washington Capitals team.
For sure. I mean, yeah, I guess I would go right back to that. I mean, playing with Giroux and Briere, I mean, come on.
Well, that's not who he played with, really.
He played with, actually, well, not this past year, but he played a lot the year before with Shrew.
And he looked a lot better.
Well, yeah.
So there you go. No, I agree. I think, so why is he still waiting for a contract? Do you think that, I mean, obviously we sort of know there's been the character issues and the people saying that he's, you know, a problem in the room and all that, but they say that about a lot of players, right? They said that about Phaneuf, they said that about Kessel, they said that about Grabowski.
Yeah, maybe so, we're just waiting to welcome to our island of misfit toys. I don't know.
Right. So, like, what is different? You know, sometimes obviously there are issues in the locker room. Obviously, I think that some people are just dicks, right? So, yeah. Is Alexander Semin one of those guys, or what? And at what point does that matter more than his ability to play hockey? Right? Because everyone's sort of fawning over Shane Doan at this point, and Shane Doan's older, scores less. You know, is the, his sort of,
well,
perceived grittiness?
I think it's a different situation because Doan, being how being the age he is probably going to be looking to sign a deal for a year or two, right?
You really don't think he wants a retirement, you know, pay the rest of his life? He's been languishing in Phoenix
How old is Shane Doan right now?
I don't know, like 30, 33. He's got to be, he played in Winnipeg, for God's sakes. So he's got to be old.
Exactly. Hang on.
Would it be a 35-plus contract?
Oh, man, yeah, no, he's way older. Okay, so born in 1976. So,
bicentennial year.
Yeah. No, Shane Doan is old, man. So, yeah, I think they're maybe not even competing for the same market of teams, right? Because signing a UFA graybeard like Doan to a two-year deal is something like Pittsburgh could do pretty easily, right? But Alexander Semin, maybe not. I mean, they did deal Stahl before his, you know, big money was set to kick in, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. I think that they're maybe not that comparable, or the markets for each player aren't necessarily
but I mean, you've got, the crazy thing is you've got, like, Pittsburgh saying, we need a winger for Sidney Crosby. I can't think of a better player on the market that would look good with Sidney Crosby.
Than Alex Hammond?
Yeah, like, the guy's a scoring winger. What do you want?
Sure, yeah. It's not to say that Pittsburgh wouldn't have interest in Semin. I just mean that, you know, there are teams out there who may not have interest in both, right? Especially with there being uncertainty on, you know, with regards to the CBA. So, you know, shorter-term contracts may be more popular now than they were 3 years ago. I don't know. Yeah, which again, brings us to the Phoenix Coyotes situation. So it's recently been revealed that the minimum number of required signatures on a petition to, you know, shut down the bid for Jameson's bid for the Coyotes, that is a lot lower than previously estimated. So, you know, there's talk that even today, a decision could come down that, you know, the sale has been blocked because, you know, this Goldwater Institute has sort of alerted the public and intervened. I mean, they're probably kind of crazy conservative watchdog, but I mean, the taxpayers of Glendale are being just absolutely ravaged by Gary Bettman. I mean, they're on the hook for something to the tune of like $25 million this year in losses. I mean, I can't imagine how they agreed to assume that kind of risk for a town that's like 225,000.
Shiny hockey team. I don't know.
It's ridiculous. Anyway, but the point is that
petition. The first thing I thought of was when George Michael runs for student council, and he's like, "I did it. I got the 10 signatures. It took me all day, but I'm running for student council president."
Yeah. Well.
So like, is this the same situation in Phoenix?
The requisite number of signatures on the petition is based on the previous election's voter turnout. And in a city of 224,000 people, I think it is, they only had 18, no, they thought it was 18,000 people came out to vote. As it turned out, the number was actually lower, and something more like 11 or 12,000 people came out to vote. So
man, that doesn't even fill the jobbing.com arena. They don't even have a full hockey crowd voting at this.
Well, but that's just voting in their municipal elections.
Right.
Now, which is pitiful, but I suppose probably municipal election turnout is probably pretty pitiful in a lot of places. But anyway, so they had to collect 10% of the signatures, or 10% of the number of voters from the previous year. So I guess they've already got, or reportedly, they've already collected the requisite, you know, 1,200 signatures, and, you know, are ready to shut this thing down, which people are starting to say could very well lead to the Phoenix Coyotes just being dismantled and there being a dispersal draft. And, you know, we have no idea, but, you know, conceivably there would be later an expansion draft for an expansion team somewhere else. Now, I don't know. I feel like it would be a legally sticky sort of situation for the NHL to say, oh, well, we're folding a team instead of relocating it, you know, and avoiding the lease commitments in Glendale so easily, and then restarting a team elsewhere. I mean, you'd think there'd be some kind of lawsuit there, but
right, whatever. Yeah, pretty transparent attempt to...
Yeah, but, you know, that said, though, the city of Glendale city councilors don't seem to be, like, the sharpest tools in the shed anyway, so, honestly, maybe that's not an issue at all.
Well, they're old, JP, and they're sun-soaked, you know. I feel useless after a day in the sun. I can't imagine what, like, 40 years of it does to people, right?
I guess so. Well, anyway, long story short, this is affecting Shane Doan's decision-making process, right? Are the Phoenix Coyotes going to be subject to a dispersal draft? Because if so, it's going to be better for him to just
sign
somewhere he wants, you know, via unrestricted free agency, than it is for him to get drafted by some team somewhere he doesn't want to go.
Right. But, I mean, he's been playing in Nashville. I mean, he's been playing in Phoenix all this time. Can't really think he cares very much where he plays.
Well, actually, though, I think he's been there for so long at this point. I think he's probably got roots there, you know, any other hockey player, right? So
making fun of
Phoenix. I can imagine him wanting to go somewhere on the West Coast to remain close to family and whatnot.
Well, you'd think the smart money would be to go to L.A.
Yeah, really, but...
So you're thinking, what would a dispersal draft look like then?
Well, I'm not sure. You'd need a CBA expert or something.
Has there ever been one? My guess
is that there have been dispersal drafts for teams that have folded in the past, but we're going back decades, right?
Yeah, that's what I'm,
it's obviously never happened under this collective bargaining agreement. And, you know, I can imagine that it would complicate negotiation for the collective bargaining agreement going on now, right? Because, of course, the reconfiguration of the conferences was a contentious issue for the union, right? All of a sudden, if the league has 29 teams instead of 30, maybe it's easy just to shove the Jets in the West and then, you know, leave it at that for another year. On top of that, the NHLPA probably isn't thrilled about losing, you know, a whole pile of jobs, right? Because it's not just the 23 players on the NHL roster. It's up to 50 standard player contracts with the team, you know, in their minor league, maybe even in the ECHL. But anyway, so there could be a pile of jobs there. The only thing is, they can't really say that the NHL didn't do everything they could to save them, right? I mean,
no, that's true. And then you also have the fact that you're shipping these players to God knows where, right? Like, they have no autonomy or choice or any sort of say in the matter. And I can't think that they'd be too happy about that process in general, right?
Yeah, so I'd be curious to see how this plays out, especially because they're in the midst of these negotiations. And heck, who would you want off the Coyotes?
Can I start with Dave Tippett? Is that allowed? Can I
really?
Can I take him first? I don't know. He turned Mike Smith into a stellar all-star goaltender, basically.
Yeah, really. Well,
aside from that, probably my first pick would be Ekman-Larsson.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I think he's going to be a pretty good defenseman for a few years to come, and he's cheap right now, and exactly the kind of guy I think that the NHL is sort of leaning towards, right? Like, plays the puck really well, moves the puck really well, skates very well, you know, that kind of thing.
Keith Yandle, another interesting option there.
Yeah, yeah. From what I've heard, especially since he's on the market, a lot of people say that he's really good, obviously, but it's sort of more Cobberley-esque with the lack of, you know, tough minutes and being sort of more of a two-way guy. He's really more of an offensive kind of puck mover, right?
Yeah. And then, of course, there's David Runblad.
Yeah, yeah. He'd be the good options on the back end, yes.
Yep, his zone starts were pretty, like, he was pretty well cushioned last year. But still, his Corsi numbers look pretty good.
How many games did he play with Phoenix last year? I didn't think he played many.
30.
Oh, that was it, yeah.
Yeah, that's a reasonable amount.
Aside from that, I don't know who else, I guess.
Hanzel.
Hanzel, yeah.
Verbata.
Verbata, yeah.
Vermette.
Yeah. These are all, I mean, again, it's like, you look at the Phoenix roster and they're all second tier guys who that don't get me too excited, right? That's why I want Dave Tippett, because somehow he got drags this team into the playoffs every freaking year. You know, I mean, they're good, but and they play in a tough division and a tough conference, and I don't understand it. You know, I guess they're just well coached, right? Or do you think it's just more the system that he uses as opposed to sort of the individual, right?
Well, I don't know. I'm gonna.
I mean, it's a big question, right? So
yeah, I really have no idea how much. I mean, because there's no verifiable way to measure the impact of a coach, right?
Well, I mean, they sucked when Wayne Gretzky was there, and they got pretty good after he left.
I guess, but I mean, you know, it's not as though there hasn't been a large turnover in players as well,
right? So,
and knowing what we know about shot quality not being terribly, not having a huge impact on save percentage, you know, you've got to think that, well, maybe it's not all just the system that made Mike Smith good.
Right. Well, and my question too is, with this dispersal draft, really, like, how do you do it in such a way that it's fair? Because the Coyotes only have, or any NHL team really only has, four or five guys who are clearly above either replacement level or what you've got on your team, right? Like, there's some times where it's just like, well, we don't need, I don't know, Kyle Chipchura or something. Like, we don't want that player. Like, at this point, it's just another contract, right? So how do you make it sort of fair that, because if you do it as sort of a traditionally in like a waiver or like how the lottery draft works, then that's not really a fair system, right? There's only five or six guys in the team that are actually worth having, you know, outside of, not that they're not good NHL players or anything, but you know what I'm saying, right? Like, that are going to bump your own guys down the depth chart, right?
I guess given that the Leafs were a lottery team last year, I'd kind of hope that they just stuck with the draft order. But
right, yeah.
I think that if they were playing for a respectable, you know, level NHL team, you'd think that the majority of the players would be considered an asset, even though they are a contract to most NHL teams, right? And even a team like, I don't know, let's say Colorado, who probably has some kind of internal budget below the cap, you know, even they could probably find a few players they could take that would help, I don't know, even fill out their AHL roster or something like that. Or maybe they could find a player that would be, you know, maybe not even better than what they've got, but at least a cheaper alternative to what they've got, you know? So, I don't know. I think that teams that, you know, are worried about money could probably just take those smaller contracts, and the teams with more money to spend would be more than happy to take the big names.
Right, but then I guess where do you sort of, you've got this extra glut of guys, and who sort of gets pushed out the door, right? So I think, again, that's not only does the PA have an issue with what happens to the guys in Phoenix, but what happens to the fringe guys on every other, you know, NHL team that, like you just explained or described, suddenly, well, this guy's cheaper that we just got from Phoenix for nothing, so see you later. Like,
I don't know, they get traded or they get bumped.
Right, so there's going to be a sort of
a job loss more. For sure.
Yeah, not that that's the, you know, obviously the end of the world, but that the PA's job is to ensure that there's not job loss, right?
Yeah, well, I don't think they can argue the NHL didn't do everything they could to save those jobs.
No, but so realistically, what do you think happens with Phoenix here?
Honestly, I think I would prefer to see the team just relocated, because it just, I don't know, in my mind, it somehow just makes more sense, right? However, rumor is that the NHL can make a lot more money by charging for an expansion fee than they can for a relocation fee. And on top of that, the Glendale arena lease may be really difficult to get themselves out of. So, you know, if that's what's necessary, then fine, I guess. It seems like it's a very real possibility at this point, what with Goldwater having collected enough signatures to shut down the proposal for Jameson's purchase of the team. And I think, you know, somebody like Quebec City or Seattle would probably come up with the money for an expansion.
Where do you see the most likely destination for him?
Oh, well, it's got to be one of Quebec, GTA, or Seattle.
Now, so I mean, the sort of the NHL, do you think the NHL has learned its lesson with Phoenix and is just going to go with the safe bet of putting them in, where you call it?
Well, I don't know, some traditional hockey market. You know, I think that that's sort of a relative term. You know, like the NHL has gone back to cities many times, right? Atlanta's had a couple teams at this point. Winnipeg's had a couple teams, right? And any business like the NHL isn't going to want to lose out on any big market. So I can imagine that in another few years, you know, they give Phoenix another chance. Absolutely.
But then, I mean, you've got the arena sitting there, and I don't know.
Hopefully they build another one, because honestly, it just seems like, you know, that was a terrible location for them. Just bad news from start to finish. I mean, the Leafs was bad.
I don't know enough about it really yet to make any judgments per se. But again, when you're going sort of intuitively, it seems like there's going to be less hockey fans in Phoenix than there would be even in Seattle or definitely Quebec City, right? So, I mean, I do understand the idea that, yes, part of it is looking for new markets and expanding to new markets. But I think that there were so many other mistakes made by the NHL and by the Coyotes as well. And just, yeah, like you said, with the arena, that sort of made the situation untenable, right? Like, even though the team's doing well in the standings, that hasn't really translated into, you know, success financially, right? So,
well, but their success only came when, you know, in the final years here, when, you know, it was obvious that the team has been, well, I guess I don't want to say it's obvious that they're doomed, because I've been saying that for like three seasons now, but, you know, really the team has been teetering on the edge of existence for two or three seasons now. And it again, it's hard to build a fan base when the team might be leaving next year, you know? So, you know, yeah, sure. I think we can blame a lot of bad hockey decisions for a lack of fan base early on, you know, especially because if you're bad for 10 years and then suddenly you're good for a year or two, probably the thing that stands out in people's minds is that the the type of, you know, like a hockey team in Arizona that never seemed to belong in the first place and was bad for 10 years is suddenly good, you know, seems like a bit of a fluke to the casual fan more than anything. Now, you know, if they kept this up for a few years and had some kind of ownership stability, yeah, of course, you know, I can see them building a fan base, whatever. I mean, they've done it in Dallas, they've done it in Anaheim, they've done it in, I don't know, whatever.
Yeah, that's me. It's worked in sort of, you know, quote unquote unconventional markets in the past. So I don't know, obviously those markets had success and sort of, you know, Phoenix has never really had like a big name player, right? Like Anaheim got Paul Kariya and
and Solani for a while,
and Solani before that, you know, and Oleg Tverdovsky. And
wait, okay, you're overlooking some big ones here. I mean, come on, there's Pronger, there's Niedermeyer.
No, I'm speaking before when they were sort of, you know, growing the fan base of a smaller team. Like, guys, like, you know, Korea would be the biggest. And you know, Phoenix really hasn't done that. A guy sort of who stands out even NHL-wide, right? Like, they've got guys that are great players. Like, Keith Yandel's a great player. And
I guess they did have Wayne Gretzky.
Well, yeah, but he was a disaster.
Wow, sure.
But I'm speaking on the ice, right? Like, you know, I remember Ed Jovanovski, when they signed him, was a big deal, right? Because he was a big guy and everything, but yeah, they've never really had that impact forward. But they've drafted high, right? Like Kyle Turris didn't really work out for them, you know, had the potential to be a guy like that. And they just haven't had any really, like, part of it's, you know, just because I don't think that they, you know, could afford to keep a guy like that around, but it just seems like they've gotten sort of unlucky when it comes to drafting, right?
Well, I mean, it's as much about player development as it is drafting, right? And there's a whole lot less luck involved in player development than there is drafting. So, again, I would sort of point to them just generally making bad hockey decisions.
But I guess for a long time they weren't successful. But I was going to say now they're still successful. It's just they can't seem to – and maybe, you know, maybe it's the virtue of the system that they play, right, where it's not going to produce a superstar as likely. I don't know, but yeah, it's interesting because you see, and even Dallas, you know, they got to bring Mike Modano with them, which was helpful. I mean, if Phoenix could have brought Timo Solani with them, that might have been a lot better for the franchise, right?
Well, hey, having marquee players doesn't hurt, that's for sure. Anyway, all right, well, maybe we'll cap it there.
We have rambled on a lot about Phoenix.
Despite neither of us being experts.
Exactly.